these types of horrible, horrible events.
So anytime there is a wild end fire and a team is called, one of the roles is to bring in a public information officer, and that is just to provide updates to the public, coordination of communication between state, federal, local partners, and also update, you know, our national NCWEB information pages as well, so that people locally have a place to go to get updated information on the fire.
Yeah, that's great. I know information spreads quick in the digital age, but when the remote location of this fire hampers that information being spread, it's really crucial to have someone like you to get that information out to everybody.
Yeah, and you know, this fire is located in a very remote, rugged terrain in the mountains here, but we do have great communication with the crews up there, as well as the crews at ICP. You know, radio contact is available at any point in time. We have crews that travel both from Lander at the ICP up to the actual fire location throughout the day, throughout the evening. And so communication is always key in any type of situation. And so that's our goal, to make sure that we have great communication and then we can share that information to the public.
Just getting the facts out there so people know. I mean, a really crucial moment in that was when there was road closures. So there was a road closure. Could you tell us a little more about that and why that happened?
Yeah, so the road closure was actually issued by the Shoshone and Arapahoe Fish and Game Office. And that road closure is for the Moccasin Lake Dickinson Park Road. That is the only road access into the where the fire is. And as a lot of you locals know, it's a very narrow road with switchbacks. And so just to ensure the safety of our fire crews and the safety to the public, that road was closed to allow just access to fire personnel at this time.
And even the fire personnel are having some issues with the roads. We chatted yesterday a little bit at the command site, the incident command site, and you guys were filling me in on the number of tires that were being blown out by all the rocks on the road, and then the responders were then, how did they have to handle that situation?
Yeah, so again, that road, the main road is in pretty good shape. It's a normal gravel road, but then the fire crew has to access the fire via a two-track road, and the engines are very heavy, and so popping tires occurs a lot. Fortunately, we're always supplied with additional tires, and we have resources on hand to make that change out happen quickly as possible. We also have UTVs up there to assist getting firefighters to align as well.
So you're prepared for the worst, but that doesn't make it any easier for getting out there, does it?
Yep, no, definitely a challenge. From where our firefighters are stationed overnight to get to the fire perimeter is about an hour commute in the mornings and at night to get back to base camp.
Wow, okay. So that definitely gives reason to why the fire was difficult to assess just in the first place, was because of that remote location.
Yep, exactly. And the point of origin of the fire was actually down in the canyon there, and there are no trails or roads down in that canyon. And so to get to the point of origin of the fire requires hiking.
Okay, wow. Yeah, that really lets you know what our firefighters are going through out there. How is the morale of everyone out there on scene? Because they're camping out there overnight, correct? It's a little base camp.
Yep, correct. So our crews working up on the fire edge are base camped up there at the FOB there in Dickinson Park area campgrounds. So we are able to provide them with hot meals. We have a caterer here that we have breakfast that leaves Lander at 4:30 in the morning so that it can arrive up there for the crews. We're providing them with lunch and then hot dinners again in the evening. So that is available. We have supplies on hand, bathrooms up there. If they need anything personal or equipment, we're getting those supplies up there throughout the day for them. Crews are also on a work schedule, so at the end of their shift, which is typically 14 days, we rotate crews out so that they can get that rest needed to then go out on the next fire.
That's huge. And yeah, I can't imagine the morale booster that is for them just to have a warm meal that's not just granola bars or some type of canned soup later for dinner. That's amazing that they're all getting out there. On that note, too, how can the public do anything to aid in the efforts? Is there can they give Gatorade to some of the responders, anything like that? Or
Yeah, so part of the great thing about having a team is that when we bring a team onto a fire, we have all those resources available. So we have Gatorade, water, food, meals, supplies available for our firefighters. And so donations aren't needed at this point in time, but we do encourage you to reach out and consider donating to your local fire department.
Okay.
And there also is the Wildland Firefighter Foundation, and that is a nationwide foundation that you can make donations to as well.
That's amazing, because I know the community just I've been out in it with a number of events the past few weeks, and everywhere I go, they're asking for updates on the fire and how are they doing out there, and just the amount of appreciation that the community really has for everything that y'all are doing out there. Just so you guys know, it's...
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. And we have daily briefings, and I've been really relaying that information up to our crews up on the fire, that, you know, the appreciation is huge from, and the community support is huge. So they're getting that message up there as well. And that always is encouraging to hear as well.
I can't imagine. One of the things that's really of concern to some of the locals in the area is if it's going to affect hunting or fishing, any of that. Could you give us a little bit of information on that?
Yeah, so I would recommend reaching out to your local Wyoming Game and Fish Department. There's one here in Lander, or also the Shoshone and Arapaho Fish and Game in Fort Washakie for any direct hunting questions that you may have. You know, the road is closed. The plan is, as soon as we feel that it's safe for the firefighters and that the Shoshone and Arapaho tribal fish and game feel comfortable, there are discussions on, you know, when that road can be open. So that is a goal once... you know, objectives are met to get that open. But again, if you have any specific questions related to hunting, I would defer those to the Game and Fish or the Tribal Fish and Game.
Okay, great. Are there any other areas of concern that you guys might feel the public might not be aware of just yet? Not necessarily areas of concern, but things that they might want to know that you think that they haven't been made aware of yet?
Sure. So, you know, the last couple days, it seems like the fire has had minimal activity, which is great. We are in a red flag warning today and were yesterday. So I'm sure areas of smoke were seen yesterday, which that hadn't happened for the last few days. That's likely to occur again. And a lot of what that is interior pockets of the fire. When fire moves through an area, it doesn't necessarily, you know, affect all areas in there. So we still do have some internal pockets kind of called green islands within that fire.
Okay.
And those can ignite, especially with, you know, weather, higher winds, warmer temperatures. And so when you do see those areas of smoke today, a lot of that is occurring from those fires within the fire perimeter. And also crews are going to be continuing to work on the fire line, establishing containment throughout the day and throughout, you know, our operations here.
Got it. Something that I know a lot of people are wondering as well, you can't talk, the origin of the fire is under investigation, but something that I've heard people wanting to know is how was the fire first reported?
Yeah, so it was a smoke report. I'm not exactly sure who made that report,
right,
but it could have been any member of the community or whatnot. So typically a smoke report goes through the emergency management system. That information for us gets usually relayed to the Cody Dispatch Center, and then they dispatch the local resources to go and see, you know, that smoke report. And so that occurred on Thursday afternoon. The local resources, including BIA, BLM, Forest Service, and the local Fremont County engines went up there and then determined that where the location of the fire was and tried to determine the best access route. And so that was a challenge on Thursday because there are no roads directly to the fire or trails. Determining the best way to access that fire. And then it ran into the evening time, which again, you know, our number one objective is always the safety of our firefighters and the safety of the public. So wanting to make sure that we engage the fire in a safe manner for everybody.
Now, what was that like when, on Friday, when those nasty winds picked up, that storm that I drove out to the Shoshone Rose Casino area and just took a little video of the wind blowing the smoke around? What was that? Were you there that day?
So I was actually up on the fire Thursday night and Friday morning, and then I was back in town to try to take over the role of public information officer on Friday afternoon, and then we did receive those strong winds. And so originally the fire was estimated at about 100 acres. Those winds caused the fire to increase to around 700 acres. on that Friday day. So again, wind is a huge factor in fire. There were reported winds of over 60 miles per hour up on the fire that night.
Wow. What's that? Because you were there. What's that feeling like when you're first addressing the fire, and then what is that? What's going through your head when you're seeing the wind affect it and you're seeing it get bigger and you know that this is going to be a different type of beast?
Yeah. So one of the things that we do when we're on site doing initial attack of a fire is we have people that take weather updates hourly. Mm-hmm. And we also are in coordination with the weather service to make sure that we know what weather is anticipated on the fire. So that goes into the planning efforts of making sure we're going to put firefighters in a safe place. We also always make sure that we have routes established if they need to leave the area, you know, in a very short period of time. So that is always something that's addressed. So when we were up there Friday morning working on the line initially, you know, we had evacuation routes determined already and safety zones for firefighters if, and like it did, the wind occurred.
Just being prepared as always, just knowing that those things can potentially happen and just being knowing that you're going to have exactly the things you need to get done to get out of them quick.
Yep, exactly. And the other thing that I forgot to mention too is on initial assessment of the fire, it's always determined what resources are needed. So resource orders were placed on Friday to start bringing in additional resources to work the fire as well.
And was that, or I'm assuming that the air resources then that came in?
Yep, we were able to get air resources on the fire right away. And currently we have two Type 1 helicopters, which are the larger helicopters. They're able to haul a larger volume of water and conduct water drops on the area. And then we have a Type 3 helicopter currently working the fire. It also can provide water drops and also reconnaissance missions, gear drop off for our firefighters up there. So we're using all three of those resources throughout the day. The other great thing is even though we had the red flag warning, we were able to continue to fly throughout yesterday. So sometimes when winds get above 35 miles per hour, the effectiveness of air support, being that it can cause a challenge to fly in windy conditions. We also want to make sure that they're safe, especially flying in a canyon. And then sometimes the water drops aren't as effective if the wind is very strong as well. But we were able to use those resources throughout yesterday. And again, the plan is to continue to use those today.
And I'm assuming the winds have a huge effect on the helicopters when they're carrying these giant gallons of water, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one thing, we are at a very high elevation as well. And so elevation affects how much water helicopters can carry too. So depending on their fuel load, our Type 1s are currently hauling anywhere between 500 to 700 gallons of water in their water drops.
Now, when I was at the site with you yesterday, we were chatting, was it Rich Tanner?
Yep, he is our incident commander trainee.
He was telling
Rich Hayner.
Rich Hayner. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, Rich Hayner. Yeah, he did a great job. He broke down the incident map for me, and one of the things that he was letting us know was how in the canyon the sheer gradient drop off of it was really affecting the helicopter's ability to get down into the canyon, and then the unpredictable winds in the canyon.
Yep, exactly. You know, canyons kind of make their own winds. The wind up above the canyon can be different than in the canyon, and so that's something we have to consider with all of our resources, our firefighters on the ground as well as our air resources. That canyon is extremely steep. It's a lot of rock faces that, you know, don't allow for great access, especially for ground crews.
Okay. That's pretty much all I had in terms of questions for you. Was there anything else that you wanted to just get out to the public at all about this? I know there was warnings about the drones. Please don't fly the drones. But is there anything else that you think the public might want to know?
Yeah, just wanted to make sure that everybody's aware. We'll continue to provide our daily updates. NCWeb website for the fire is just ncweb.nwcg.gov/incident, and the incident number is 7836, or you can just look up the Sand Creek fire. And again, just want to relay our appreciation to the community for all of their support.
Well, and just right back at you with that, we really thank you so much for everything that you and all the firefighters are doing out there. We appreciate you. And Laura, thank you for coming in today and talking to us.
Yep, thank you. Have a great day.
All right, once again, that was Public Information Officer for the Sand Creek Fire, Laura Lozier, chatting with us. We will come back to the show to talk about some local and national news right after a word from our sponsors.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
There's no better feeling than grilling out, and there's no better place than Ace to get the best grill for your family, like a Weber gas grill, a Traeger wood pellet grill, or a Big Green Egg charcoal grill. You won't find these premium brands and service at a warehouse store, only at your neighborhood Ace. Around the block, what you need in stock, with people who know their grills.
Get lots of grilling accessories and propane, too, at Lander Ace Hardware, 5th and Main, locally owned and operated.
At Sage Wales Healthcare, we know that early detection is the best defense against breast cancer. And a mammogram is the best means of early detection. We are pleased to introduce 3D mammography services at our Riverton campus to our community. Our new 3D mammo technology offers even better imaging for a more accurate diagnosis to help detect breast cancer in its earliest stages. So keep tomorrow healthy. Ask your provider to schedule your 3D mammogram today or visit sagewesthealthcare.com to learn more.
Palace Pharmacy is dedicated to provide you the tools to live a healthier life. If you've been thinking about getting immunized for COVID-19, Palace Pharmacy is offering the one-time Johnson & Johnson immunization shot. Walk-ins are welcome. Did you know that Palace Pharmacy also provides flu and strep testing? Palace Pharmacy, where the drive-up window is always an option, on West Main in Lander.
All right, Lander, we are back from our break. We just got done chatting with Public Information Officer for the Sand Creek Fire, Laura Lozier. Once again, you are listening to KOVE 1330 AM, 107.7 FM, Community Connected, and this is Coffee Time. I'm your host, Vince Tropea. Before we get on to the news of the day, I just wanted to give a little weather update. The majority of Fremont County is under a red flag warning today due to the low humidity and warm temps and gusty winds, according to the latest forecast from the National Weather Service in Riverton. Burning is strongly discouraged. Like Laura was just talking about, these temporarily nasty conditions aren't conducive to the mitigation of fire, so please make sure that if you're burning anything that it is controlled. They're just strongly discouraging it, though, so you may want to rethink doing that today. You don't want to add to any more of the smoke and fire in the area. Next week, though, you may want to find a jacket or your winter clothes. Get those fall hoodies out. A cold front is moving across the state on Monday and brings a nearly 20-degree temperature drop compared to the expected high on Sunday. Once again, this is according to the National Weather Service in Riverton. The first day of fall officially begins on Wednesday, September 22nd. So like I said, be prepared. Get those fall hoodies ready. It's going to be a nice, cool week next week. Similar weather patterns continue Friday through Sunday as well. Please, during this weekend, so please make sure that there is possible critical fire danger before we get into those cool temperatures next week. Like I talked about at the top of the show, not something that you want to hear about during the COVID age, especially right now, but there is a incident of the plague that was found in Fremont County. This is from the Wyoming Department of Health. They announced on September 15th the detection of a rare but serious case of the pneumonic plague, not the bubonic plague, the pneumonic plague, like pneumonia, in northern Fremont County resident. The plague is a bacterial infection that can be deadly to humans and other mammals, including pets, if it's not treated promptly with antibiotics. This disease can be transmitted to humans from sick animals or by fleas coming from infected animals. In this case, the Fremont County case, the person had contact with sick pet cats. So if you notice anything abnormal in your cats or your dogs or any animals in the area, please get them checked out right away. Dr. Alexia Harris, the state health officer and state epidemiologist with the WDH, said that while the risk for humans to contact the plague is very low in Wyoming, the disease has been documented throughout the state in domestic and wild animals. Plague symptoms depend on how the patient is exposed, but the most common form of the plague, where patients develop the sudden onset of fever, headache, chills, and weakness, and one or more swollen, painful lymph nodes called buboes. This form usually results from the bite of an infected flea. individuals with the septicemic plague develop fever, chills, extreme weakness, abdominal pain, shock, and possible bleeding into the skin and other organs. This can occur as the first symptom of plague or may develop from untreated bubonic plague and be caused by the bite of an infected flea or the handling of an infected animal. To reduce the risk of plague, the WDH recommends reducing rodent habitats around the home, workplace, and recreational areas by removing brush, rock piles, junk, cluttered firewood, and possible rodent food supplies. Wear gloves if handling skinny, potentially infected, animals to prevent contact between your skin and the plague area. Use repellent if exposure to fleas is possible during activities such as camping, hiking, or working outdoors. Products containing DEET can be applied to the skin as well as clothing. Keep fleas off indoor and outdoor pets by applying flea control products, and animals that roam freely outdoors are more likely to come in contact with plague-infected animals or fleas. If pets become sick, seek care from a veterinarian as soon as possible, and do not allow dogs or cats that roam free to share beds with people. So, very rare, unlikely that it will spread, but you don't want to see a spread in the plague, so take as many precautions as you possibly can. Tomorrow on our show, we are going to have, as guests, Jillian Ballow, the Wyoming Superintendent of Public Instruction, and the Wyoming State Auditor, Christy Racines, and they'll be here to talk about the one-shot antelope hunt for something that's very cool this year. This is going to be the first year that there's going to be an all-female team. So, State Auditor Christy Racines and State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jillian Ballow, along with State Representative Ember Oakley and Megan Degenfelder from Morningstar Partners, will compete in the 2021 Wyoming One-Shot Antelope Hunt, which is going on from September 15th through the 18th. Notable past shooters include the likes of General Norman Schwarzkopf, Roy Rogers, Senator Al Simpson, and Vice President Dick Cheney, and this is the first year that women will participate as hunters. That is pretty awesome. In terms of local events that are going to be coming up, once again, tonight is the Water for Wildlife Banquet, and that'll be taking place at the Lander Community and Convention Center tonight. Cocktails and live music start at 5 p.m. Dinner is served at 6. The live auction is at 7. They're going to have music by the Low Water String Band, raffles, games, live and silent auction, and they'll be raising money for the Water for Wildlife Foundation, which is a very good cause. So make sure you get out and check that out. Jalon Crossland concert is going to be happening this Friday at the Lander Valley High School Auditorium. Masks and social distancing will be required. Visit the Lander Community Concerts Association website at landerconcerts.org for more info on how to reserve tickets. And they will also be available for purchase on the night of the performance. Tickets for young adults are ages 18 to 25 are $10, and tickets for adults 26 and over are $15. Pick 4 ticket bundles for $40 or 7 ticket season passes for $60. In local broadcasting news today, we are going to have an all-new Lander Biz show at 4 o'clock, which is made possible every week by the Lander Chamber of Commerce. This week, they're going to be chatting all things insurance with Justin from the Farm Bureau Insurance. On Friday at 2, an all-new County 10 kickoff show previewing the upcoming weekend of high school sports. And at 3 p.m., LVHS football will be playing at Evanston, and Mike Noseep and Tony Larvey will have all the action as the Tigers go on the road for the first time this season. Once again, we would like to thank our sponsors here at Coffee Time, which include the Flatstick Bar and Grill, Myers Gambles, Teton Therapy, Lander Ace Hardware, Sage West, White Buffalo Recovery Center, and Palace Pharmacy. Thanks again to all of our sponsors. We appreciate you guys. If you would like to be a guest on Coffee Time, please feel free to reach out. Stop by the studio, email county10@radio.com. For more information on all of the news that we talked about today, please check out county10.com. Look at the news. Check out all the podcasts that we have on there. That's where you'll find the Fairing in the Field podcast mentioned yesterday and all of the news updates to get you through the day. Thanks again. This is Coffee Time. You guys have a great rest of your day, Lander.
Whenever we make choices and decisions, no matter how old or young, those choices and decisions bring about consequences. So we are constantly implementing choices and decisions as our lives unfold. When a situation comes up, we are either saying yes or we are saying no. From that yes or no choice, an action occurs, and the natural laws allows us to experience the consequences of our choices and decision. White Buffalo Youth Prevention encourages you to make positive choices, which will lead to positive consequences.
335-3060.
Going to roll out to his right, under pressure, looking to pass. Ball's up in the air. Hope the Tigers is going to be picked up by Stauffenberg. Stauffenberg is going to take it down to the 30, to the 25, out of bounds there. Ball's going to be put up. Got a man, and it's Jonah Brown. Tiger Green in the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers.
Lander Tiger football is back. This Friday, catch a special early afternoon game as the Tigers hit the road for the first time this season to take on the Evanston Red Devils. Mike Nosep and Tony Larvey have all the coverage starting about 2:30 for the pregame show, 3 o'clock kickoff on KOVE 1330 AM, 107.7 FM, and streaming at county10.com.
Tiger Green in the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers.
He's known as George Floyd's killer, Lisa Brady, Fox News. But the now former Minneapolis police officer was just back in court in a separate case, pleading not guilty.
Derek Chauvin is arraigned today on charges of violating the civil rights of a teenager in 2017 that involved a neck restraint similar to the one used on George Floyd. According to a police report from that encounter, Chauvin wrote that the teen, who's described as 6'2 and 240 pounds, resisted arrest.
Fox's Jeff Manasso. It was Chauvin's second court appearance this week after he and three other officers pleaded not guilty to federal civil rights charges in Floyd's death. Chauvin's already been convicted of murder, sentenced to more than 22 years in prison. The FBI and police in Northport, Florida are set to speak at this hour as a nationwide appeal continues in the search for Gabby Petito, the young woman missing after a cross-country trip with her fiancé, who came home over 2 weeks ago without her and hasn't spoken to police. Police in Moab, Utah are releasing body cam footage that includes a sobbing Petito from August 12th when they responded to a disturbance at the couple's travel van. A witness telling police the couple had been arguing and that Petito appeared to hit Brian Laundrie's arm. Ultimately, there were no charges. Police say the couple described emotional challenges after traveling together for so long. There's a new federal lawsuit over New York City's vaccine mandate.